Thanks for joining me on The Pulse. I'm Bharati Jagdish, taking The Pulse today on stories in the news this week. Of course, this week, Singapore's budget 2018 overwhelmingly made headlines. The impending GST hike, no doubt, is getting a huge amount of attention. But another issue that some might say is just as important is the carbon tax that was announced in the budget. Joining me to talk about this today are Chief Editor of Channel News Asia's Digital News Desk, Jamie Ho, and an expert in the field, Melissa Lowe, a research fellow at the Energy Studies Institute at NUS. Now, large emitters in Singapore will be charged $5 per tonne of greenhouse gas emissions under the carbon tax that will be implemented next year. This is actually a downward revision from the previously announced range of between $10 and $20. Of course, the finance minister explained that the idea is to give the industry more time to adjust and to implement energy efficiency projects. The tax rate will be reviewed by 2023. The intention is to increase it to between $10 and $15 per tonne by 2030. Some, of course, have said that, you know, why? Wasn't it initially said it would be between $10 and $20? Now we're seeing just $5 per tonne. Jamie, what do you make of this? It's just a slap on the wrist, nothing.
I was actually, I mean, it's funny, right? When you look at budget and people are talking about GST going up and all sorts of things, and when you talk about taxes, it's usually going up. And in this particular case, it actually came down from what the finance minister had actually announced the previous year, right? So he said $10 to $20 per tonne. And that's what everyone was looking forward to. He said at that point in time that it was sort of comparable to other jurisdictions. So when the announced price came up this time at $5 per ton, I mean, it was definitely surprising. From the environmental point of view, I'm sure there are NGOs out there who might be slightly disappointed. And I can see that perspective because it's unclear to me at that price, whether it's for the emitter or the consumer at the end of the day, that price is a strong enough signal for behaviours to change between now and 2023.
Of course, that is the ultimate aim, right? Aside from the fact that, of course, you need to collect more revenue, but the bigger aim is to reduce emissions. Melissa, what do you make of this? Is this really going to have any impact at all? I mean, clearly, Jamie and I have doubts.
Yeah, so the announced rate of $5 per tonne of carbon dioxide equivalent should still make an impact on companies who are obviously have a carbon pricing liability because they do emit above 25,000 tons of CO2 equivalent. So 25,000 times $5, it's still going to make a dent in their P&L, their bottom line at the end of the day. So they will have to consider this very carefully. And the government has also announced that they intend to increase the rate to between $10 and $15 by 2030.
So why do you think they reduced it as a start?
I think the initial intention of $10 and $20 was they looked at other jurisdictions' prices. As you know, some countries, as Sweden, for instance, has a carbon price of nearly $200, right? And it's interesting that we picked a level that I think was more suited to our industries to begin with, to our market, our economy, the kind of products that we make here. So we picked a price that was, even we thought that companies might have an internal carbon price that was around this level. My sense is that they revised it downwards because perhaps before they thought they might consider some form of, exercise where they could assist companies to tide over this transition. But as Minister Heng announced, there will be no exemptions. So, and we need to consider that there are other costs involved in moving towards between 1% and 2% energy efficiency improvements. For instance, last year, the Energy Conservation Act was tightened through an amendment to the original act that was passed in 2012. And that has compliance costs as well. So companies will now essentially have to appoint a greenhouse gas manager. In the past, it used to just be an energy manager, but now such a person would have to have 3 years' experience, this, which is much more than previously, it's like a 1 year experience or something. And additionally, they have to verify their reports before they submit it to the National Environment Agency. And these are all costs that will go up for companies. And so we should not just be looking at the headline $5 because internally companies will actually have to be paying much more.
So Jamie, are you convinced?
Well, the thing is this. I mean, clearly the intention is for companies to have to pay more and factor this into their considerations. But also, I mean, sadly for the consumer, the idea is that this also then gets transferred or passed down to the consumer in some form or the other, in a significant enough way in which the consumer knows that there's a carbon price to what he's doing. There is a price.
That's
to
the whole idea, isn't it? To change behavior.
Exactly.
Hopefully, the consumer will use less energy.
Yes. And I therefore wonder whether at that $5 price, whether or not that is enough. Of course, the government has done, I would say, inverted commas, the right thing, you know, so signaling that there will be U-Save help along the way when the time comes. But again, with that in mind, with the very small dent that it's going to make in your electricity bills, then how does it change behavior? Are we therefore looking at it as a very, very, very progressive process where we take a very small start now, we try and see the behaviors very early on, and in 2023, then we see how it goes. Maybe that's one way to look at it, but you know, having already announced $10 to $20, I had thought that therefore there was going to be a much more aggressive start in the first place.
And a bigger impact on every individual's wallet, well as, of course, the corporation's wallet. By the way, you could see your total electricity and gas expenses increase by 1% on average. That seems like a small amount if you're talking about upper middle class and above. Of course, the lower rungs, the lower income in society do deserve the U-Save rebates. Mm-hmm. Should apply there, I would say. But everyone else should just pay up, right? Well, what do you think, Mel? How else would it impact behavior? How else would it change a person's behavior?
I'm actually more worried about the market forces, right, with the electricity price increase. So the dynamics is that electricity prices do go up and down about 20-25%, and we've seen it go up to about 27, 28 cents per kilowatt hour. So at present, we're about 21 cents per kilowatt hour as of Q1 this year. The electricity market is going to be liberalized by middle of the year, and we're not sure how that's going to impact electricity prices. Some say additional competition should drive down prices, but unless studies that look into it are done, I don't think we can say for sure.
You mean there's a possibility that the prices might actually go up with greater competition?
It might. In other countries or jurisdictions that have implemented liberalized electricity markets, what sometimes might happen is there might be bundling, for instance, so there might be more efficient power generators or gentailers, we call them, generators who also do retail. They might bundle. And so essentially what a liberalized market or full retail contestability means is that households can now get to choose, much like your telephone company, get to choose who they want to buy electricity from.
Yeah.
And if a bundle sounds really appealing, you might get a situation where you lock yourself into 2 years and it gets expensive.
This sounds very familiar, doesn't it?
One point I wanted to make in all of this, which hasn't actually been addressed in either this or the last budget debate, was transparency and awareness. I mean, well, this year is actually the year of climate action, and there's a lot of many initiatives aimed at raising public awareness of what each individual can do. But I actually, and I've said this before, am looking forward to actually more information on each of these major emitters. So we do know that there are going to be a bunch of emitters, as Melissa said just now, who
30
are
30 to 40 companies, and they contribute 80% of Singapore's greenhouse gas emissions.
And I wonder if there are any downsides, and I do support it, of identifying these big emitters, right, and making the information available as to how they are progressing over the years. Mm-hmm. If we're going to get to 2023 and the government's going to assess how everyone is doing in 2023, I wonder whether there is benefit in making that information available. Because if $5 doesn't work, I think if it works, it may just work at changing behavior. Let's make the information available. Mm. At the end of the day, they're going to be paying their carbon taxes based upon those emissions anyway. So I think that kind of information is very useful. It shows people, it shows Singaporeans what their consumption patterns are leading to, what are the emissions that come about from these things, and who are even these emitters. Now we know roughly who they are in terms of general sectors, in terms of general industries, but do we actually know who they are? Which electricity power plants are doing it, for example? And I think more awareness is always a good thing, especially if you want to change behavior.
How to change behavior on the ground? This is something we were talking about earlier as well, and it keeps coming up because that is the whole point, right? There needs to be a knock-on effect to change every individual's behavior. Mel, your views on this? What's the way forward in that regard?
Individuals' behavior. I think reducing consumption, everyday consumption. I go about Singapore and I think I see people. So I've said this on a program last year. I've been told Singapore has four seasons. Mm. COMEX, SciTex, Computer Electronics Fair. I can't remember the name of the last one. People, you know, go in throngs over the weekends to go and buy new consumer electronics. And I get very frustrated seeing that because you are essentially encouraging a buy and throw away or trade in your phone. After 2 years, I just got a text saying that, you know, my line is eligible for trading in. I'm like,
actually,
I
just got
it.
The same text, I think. We probably use the same telco.
Yeah.
But the measures at the top, the steps that are being taken, such as, you know, a carbon tax, ought to have some sort of impact. And Jamie and I, we mentioned earlier that, you know, if you're going to get a rebate anyway and it only hits you 1%, what kind of behavior changing impact will that really have? What needs to be done in that regard in order to get people to do things differently?
I think people are starting to get the sense that climate change is real. It's happening. You know, people complain about the weather all the time. We just had something in the news saying that UV rates are extreme now. We've experienced flash floods and strange temperatures in the first sort of few days of the year. Of course, there was some reports said that it was brought down to other weather phenomena. But I think people are starting to realize that it's happening and it could happen much quicker than we anticipate, because there are cascading effects, obviously, to climate change. It doesn't happen uniformly, as science might say. But I think in Singapore, perhaps, if it doesn't really affect your wallet, sad to say, people actually don't.
Yeah, you probably won't change your behavior, right?
And I think it's also a very basic sort of economic or sociological problem that people can't see that the smallest acts that they do or the smallest behavioral changes can make a bigger impact. And here we're talking about the biggest impact of all over the climate, right? So I think it's very hard, and I can see why, because every day you're sort of bombarded by options of consumption and convenience, which obviously everyone will take, right? But over time, these things matter. So one example is also all these food delivery services, right? Whether it's Uber, whether Uber Eats or whatever. Mm. Now, it's made life superbly convenient. Yes. If you want a pack of tamy pork at 8 o'clock at night, you can call a guy. In half an hour, you get it. But I don't think anyone considers the kind of energy and the kind of emissions that involve in the ordering of that one meal, because there is the guy is on his motorbike.
Yes.
You have the plastic in your food. There's a huge carbon footprint in every single thing that everyone does.
Yep.
And I think there's a study that also showed that our usage of fuel is increasing, right? Mm-hmm. So it all these adds up. And how do you change each one's individual behavior using the larger imperative is one of the hardest things that you'll ever be able to do. And it's hard not to be slightly pessimistic.
Exactly. I mean, even if we looked at basic recycling rates, for instance, they've been kind of stagnant in the last few years, in spite of the fact that there are many grassroots programs to encourage it. Many NGOs go out to try to encourage it. There are recycling bins at every HDB block, or at least, you know, every two blocks. And still, you know, I think the idea was make it convenient for people to be more environmentally friendly. But even the efforts to make it more convenient to be environmentally friendly have not really resulted in a huge spike in environmentally friendly behavior. So what's really missing here, Mel?
I think we need to move people out of their comfort zone for things to actually change. I mean, I'm on social media and I see wonderful things being done by some young people. I don't know if you've heard this. There's a group that does something called Tingkat Heroes. They literally bring their own receptacles everywhere they go. There's an Instagram account called Tapao Tales. When she goes to a party, she brings enough cutlery for everybody is supposed to be there, like 20 people. She just brings 20 plates and chopsticks or something. I'm like, because, you know, if it's convenient, people won't do it. If you sort of want to do something extra, it's hard. But I mean, one step at a time, right? I think one person at a time.
I've also heard a lot of very skeptical and cynical Singaporeans say, we're such a small population, you know, even if I did.
What difference will we make?
Yeah, what difference will we really make? The industry players need to take action.
That's 100% true.
Need to change their behavior.
But I think industry also can take a cue from individual behaviors as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we see the news from Taiwan, right? Where actually, as a Singaporean tourist going to Taiwan, you're also taken aback sometimes where you go to the shop and they don't give you a plastic bag. And you're like, excuse me, I want my plastic bag. But you don't. Mm. You know, more often than not, you do not get a plastic bag when you buy something from any convenience store in Taiwan. Mm. And they're over time changing their behavior as well. They say they're going to ban single-use plastics and straws and cups and things like that. If a society can be seen to take those steps, I think businesses will also see that, hey, this is a population that cares. This is a population that cares about their footprint. This is a population that cares about their waste. I think we also should start acknowledging that and also find a way to support that. And that's how I think businesses can come along for the ride. But if they see that the man on the street doesn't really care.
Yeah, why should they change?
Yeah, exactly.
But of course, the carbon tax should make them change a bit, right?
Well, as we say, at current levels, I am not exactly hopeful.
If the levels were to go up, what would businesses do? They would just pass on the cost to the consumer anyway, right? So it has to start from the consumer, it feels like, you know, that it won't hurt the businesses if it doesn't hurt the consumer first. The question really is, while we've talked about the success of countries like Taiwan, what will it take to get some success here among the people? If we're saying the consumer sometimes, or maybe the consumer needs to be the starting point of all this action against climate change, what is the impetus? Does it have to be the money only, or are there other things that can be done here as well? Mel, can you jump in here?
I think knowing what options there are, to protect the environment, right? So instead of focusing our efforts, we know recycling has a dismal rate in Singapore. Perhaps don't look at recycling. Why don't we reduce first, you know, refuse that bag, refuse that single-use plastic. Write to your local supermarket and tell them that you don't want so much packaging, stuff like that, right? To your MP, for instance, and ask them, you know, what is the government doing? Participate in feedback sessions with the government, which I'm sure there will be many more of this year, being the year of climate action.
A lot of people didn't even know it was the year of climate action. I took a poll at MediaCorp in the newsroom. Yeah. And these are people who are supposed to be in the know, right? Yeah. Because they do the news. But depending on which beat you're on,
so
you wouldn't know.
Things is also super important. Jamie brought up a point about something earlier. And I was going to say that actually it's funny. A lot of people don't know that Singapore is actually the third largest petrochemical refinery hub in the world, just behind Rotterdam and Houston. So I think that says a lot, right? People don't know. And I think your point was on transparency of the companies here. They have a carbon price liability, right? So if people knew who are these companies, they knew the brands, they knew what products come from these, large emitting facilities, perhaps then pressure can be applied on companies. You can find out the names, I suppose, if you wanted to, right? But the fact that many of the data right now is protected by some form of legislation, something you do about competitiveness because the market's fairly small.
Yeah.
I think we need to move beyond that mindset.
And, you know, since we were talking about little known things, each person here, actually, according to the government, produces more carbon emissions than, say, someone in a larger country like Switzerland or even France. Mm-hmm. So if you take that into account, you might start to realize that whatever you do does make an impact as well.
So on that point, it's interesting because, Singapore has very little resources. So water itself, with the difficulties with water, we have to refine water to reverse osmosis, as you know, and also desalination. And those are very energy intense processes. Mm. So because of water consumption being an electricity consumption issue, that's why we have a very large carbon footprint. Of course, lifestyle choices here in Singapore to add to that carbon footprint.
It's the nature of who we are and the sort of resources we need as well.
I entirely agree with Melissa that I think the information that you have also allows you to make a judgment as to the trade-offs that have to be made and why we are who we are. So you use the example of us being the third largest refining center. So yes, that is true. So yes, that contributes to a huge amount of emissions. But I think Singaporeans also should know that that contributes to economic growth and jobs.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
So when everyone starts talking about let's take action, let's, I think whichever way we go in terms of our final decisions, it always has to come from a basis of fact and information and trade-offs. Whether or not it's at a large level of industry, mm-hmm. or a smaller level of plastic bag use, for example. If we're going to use fewer plastic bags, why are we using fewer plastic bags? Are we concerned about disposal? If we're concerned about disposal, and here the discussion is usually coloured by talk in other countries of plastic bags flowing into the sea or clogging up rivers or hurting wildlife. But in Singapore, we don't have that problem. Right?
Or just sitting in landfills.
Yeah, well, we don't have landfills. Yes.
Yeah, what we do in Singapore is we incinerate them.
Exactly. So when we talk about plastic bags, are we concerned about disposal? Because if we are, then I don't think we should be. Mm. Let's look at the problem of plastic bags.
The production.
From a different lens, yeah. If you're asking about cutting back on production of plastic bags, let's say why we're going to suggest that. And if we suggest what are the implications of it? Because there are Singapore companies and the Singapore jobs based upon the plastic bag industry. Mm. Are we willing to look at that? Are we willing to review that? And Singaporeans have to ask themselves that as well.
If we're talking about reinventing industries and careers and reskilling and all that, maybe that's something to consider. It's okay, you know, there are alternatives, even if this industry ceases to exist or exists on a much smaller scale. The important thing also is that all this can be rather dry information. It can be boring. Both of you said, you know, we need more information out there so that consumers can make more informed choices. But it needs to be palatable. It needs to be easy to understand. All this, all these questions of trade-offs and the larger impact of your behavior, it's all important and people need to know. But so hard to actually sit down and tell someone all of these things or communicate this to someone and have them say, oh, wow, I didn't know that. Let me go change my behavior, right? So we've had so many public education campaigns over the years. The NEA has done some. Other agencies have done some. NGOs have done some. What is needed to make them more effective going forward?
I think, let's get something straight. I think Singapore, we've been very, very fortunate. We've got a great environment. We've got a clean environment. We've got clean waterways. I think people sort of have, over time, taken that little bit for granted. They've seen that maybe as a byproduct and a result of strong government action from the past, right? And they do not see their own role in contributing to that. Mm. I think once people take personal ownership over the immediate environment, I think that's the next step that has to be taken, that each one does have a role in doing that. It's not just the government's role in making sure you have your ABC waterways or whatever the thing may be. But everyone does have a role, but that is sadly sometimes lacking. I think people sometimes feel individually disempowered and sort of they feel like they're a small cog in the wheel. That's why you have occasional antisocial behaviors, whether it's littering or whether it's leaving your shared bike on the side of the road.
Yeah.
All these things are people's sort of ways in saying, I don't have much of a role to play. But I think people do have a role to play.
Yeah. Okay, the way ahead, Mel, close this off for us.
We're not sure how the market dynamics with the electricity market will occur. And I mean, the carbon tax is going to be implemented in 2019, but the first tax will be collected in 2020. So still 2 years.
2 years for people to be naughty. The hope is that the companies will use some of the programs to make their operations more energy efficient.
There may be a few companies actually just on the brink of 25,000. And they might actually push themselves to reduce emissions to the point of below 25,000 so that they're not registrable as a tax liable company, and then they don't have to pay it. So there's hope yet. I think we'll see in the next 2 years if the emissions level sort of somewhat taper off and these companies are making additional efforts in the hope of not paying $5 per ton.
Yeah, I mean let me close off as well, and I want Melissa's view on this. What's not spoken of so far? We've spoken about the level of the individual, but I want to talk about also the level of the globe, the international arena, where Singapore has also committed to the goals that it announced in Paris of cutting our emissions intensity. And I wonder sometimes how this affects our ambition as well. And I don't know whether you've done enough work in seeing how a $10 to $20 price compares to a $5 price, mm-hmm. because there must be some impact.
Yes. I would like to point out that the mechanism by which Singapore implements its carbon tax is also very interesting. Mm. If you have read the carbon pricing bill, the bill itself states very clearly, it's not presented in Parliament yet, but it will be this year. So if there are no major changes, it will likely be a fixed price credit-based system. So it signals the intention of the government actually to move the carbon price into a somewhat of a trading, emissions trading type mechanism
scheme.
At some point. Mm. It's likely because the way things are going at international negotiations is such that market mechanisms or some form of it might be a way out for as you know, developing countries all now have pledges under the Paris Agreement. In the past, under Kyoto, they did not. So it's hard to imagine a world in which market mechanisms don't play a big role because now all the developing countries also have pledges. So Singapore might be thinking, you know, some way ahead in that market mechanisms through a trading scheme of some sort. So our carbon tax, it's much more than, you know, to the surface. And $5, we should wait until the Committee of Supply debates where I think MIWA is going to explain a little bit more how it's going to work. So let's wait and see. I think it's interesting and it will be challenging a process, I'm sure. But I think if we can count on our government to think about, you know, putting stepping blocks, right, building blocks towards something, a scheme where we could link up perhaps to other jurisdictions, much like California and Quebec, right? They have a linked emissions trading scheme. We could even be players regionally in terms of trading carbon credits.
Right.
So that's something to look forward to. $5 seems fairly low as a start, but it's something. You know, you have $5, not $0.
Like it used to be or like it has been.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So companies were not penalized. And they now will be.
Okay, so let's try to be as optimistic about the impact of this as we possibly can. I think a good start is to know that, yes, 2018 is Singapore's year of climate action. If you Google it, you'll be able to see what exactly you can do as an individual.
What's your
as
pledge,
well.
Priority?
No pledges. I actually still try my best to recycle every day. So that's the difference between a pledge and actually doing it. All right.
Okay.
So the two of you have any pledges to share?
Yes, I'll walk more. Actually, I have already walked more. I'll take public transport much, much more if I do it as much as I can.
Okay.
And public transport doesn't mean a taxi or a Grab. It means the MRT.
And Mel?
To inconvenience myself more. I think taking public transport is one thing. Bring my own water bottle, bring my own receptacle. I bought a metal straw recently.
Oh, you're one of those. Okay.
I do see a water bottle. I look forward to seeing the metal straw.
Exactly, So I think just being okay with being convenienced, you know, that's really important. And make sure that everybody around you feels the same way. They don't call you crazy or why you're so extra. You know, that people are bound to ask us. And for many years, actually, I was labeled a tree hugger. Mm. It's fine to be a tree hugger.
There's no shame in it.
Yeah.
Also
it
says
be.
Melissa.
Okay.
Thank you very much both for joining me today. Chief Editor of Channel News Asia's Digital News Desk, Jamie Ho, and Melissa Low, a research fellow at the Energy Studies Institute. Thanks for joining us on The Pulse.